You might have seen a Spanish frigate floating around Sydney Harbour, the Cristobal Colón, and its crew is here to teach our sailors about Australia's three new frigates, our air warfare destroyers, with the first of them, the HMAS Hobart, expected to be handed over to the Navy in September. Now, the Spaniards arrived here on February 23 in Perth, and I have to say, from looking at where they've been, they've almost circumnavigated the nation since. So why recruit Spain to help us? Well, to answer those questions and more, I'm joined by the captain of the Cristobal Colón, Ignacio Cortero, and from Australia's Association for Maritime History, Lieutenant Commander Chris Maxworthy. Welcome to you both. Thank you for joining us here on Drive.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, now, Chris. Thank you very much.
Captain Cortero, did I get your name pronounced correctly? I have to ask.
You perfectly pronounce my name in Spanish.
Fantastic. It's good. I was very scared I would have turned it into bad Italian because I've just come back from Italy. Now, tell us about this frigate of yours. What can it do?
Well, the thing is that in the Spanish Navy, we have five ships similar. We can say that they are sister ships of the Howard-class destroyers you are building in Adelaide. Both navies agreed to deploy my ship to Australia for 4 months to improve the interoperability between both navies and to help the Royal Australian Navy in training the crews of the new destroyers by conducting, let's say, on-the-job training on board my ship.
How have you found the Australian sailors?
Well, I found them very similar to the Spanish sailors, both in character, in preparation, in the daily routine they follow is very similar to ours. So they integrate very easily and smoothly on board with my crew. And at the same time, the ship, I think, also integrated very smoothly in the Australian task groups where we have been operating since we arrived in Australia back in February.
So what sort of things have you been teaching the Australian naval crews?
Well, we are not teaching them. We are helping them in getting familiarized with the ship they are going to employ since September on. And we, for that purpose, we have been integrated into the Australian task groups and exercises with the Royal Australian Navy in their major exercises. We participated in the Ocean Explorer exercise in the West Coast with the whole Australian fleet in February and March. Then we came through the Southern Ocean, conducting some trials and tests at sea. And here in the East Coast, we have participated in the fleet surface force training and conducted, let's say, opportunity exercises with all the navies, both in the eastern and northern coast of Australia.
So where have you been? It sounds like you've been to a few places since
yes,
February.
Yes, we, as you said before, we have almost circumnavigated Australia. We arrived from Sunda Strait, crossed by Christmas Island in the northwest part. Then we arrive in Rockingham, in Fleet Base West in Australia, in 19th February. We visited Fremantle, Frio, as you say.
Oh, see, you've got the lingo down pat.
Then from there, we sailed to Adelaide. We crossed the Bass Strait and arrived in Sydney. From Sydney, we have been many times in Jervis Bay. And then we sailed to Brisbane, where we stayed for the Anzac Day. We enjoyed the Anzac Day there. Then we visit Cairns and we went through the Torres Strait up to Darwin and back to Sydney.
You're listening to Captain Ignacio Cortero from the Cristobal Colón. And with me also is Australia's, from the Australian Association for Maritime History, Lieutenant Commander Chris Maxworthy. Now, Chris, you've been on the ship.
Yeah, I've spent the last 3 weeks there.
What sort of experience has it been
It's been
you?
Fantastic. It's a wonderful, wonderful ship, and that augurs well for our capability with the three new DDGs. As you said, the first will be commissioned in September. It's been wonderful. I've never sailed through Torres Strait before. I've come round the other way normally to Darwin via the West Coast. So it was fascinating to follow the path of imagining what it must have been like for those early explorers, those Spanish explorers.
Now, I was going to say, you know, for the Spanish, they actually sailed through the Torres Strait before Captain Cook. Is that true?
Correct. Isn't it? Yeah. Actually, I think our captain, I think I should allow Captain Quartero to actually do the introduction. I can fill in some details because it's a proud aspect of the Spanish sense of their presence here in the Pacific and how much they contributed and in a way is unacknowledged by many in the community. We on the East Coast, I think, tend to think of Captain James Cook as somehow being the only guy from Europe that voyaged into the Pacific, and that before that the Pacific was empty and devoid of Europeans, which is not the case. The Spanish had been here for several centuries before that. They based their navy from Peru over on the west coast of South America there, and they were the first country really to go in exploration for the Great South Land.
For me, it was also a pleasure and a honor to sail through the Torres Strait a couple of weeks ago, taking into account that the first explorer to arrive there was Captain Torres in 1606, more than 150 years before Captain Cook arrived. So for me, it was a pleasure, and to have on board an historian as Max is, and to teaching us so many things, because this part of the Spanish history is also not well known in Spain.
Because is that because Captain Cook pinched some Spanish charts to be able to sail through the Torres Strait? Is that's something else that I read?
Yeah, I'll be judicious with my wording here. It's correct to say that Britain during the War of 1762 invaded Manila. And so what happened was that they were there for a few years, and the Spanish, you have to sort of view things in the context. So the Spanish weren't really participants in the Enlightenment. So by the 18th century, they were worried about foreign incursions into their territory. So therefore, Torres sailing through the Strait a century before, they didn't want to publish that. They sort of buried it. They had it in their own records, but they recognised that it was a threat to their security. So what happened was that Alexander Dalrymple, who was a competitor with Cook and who ultimately became the hydrographer of the Admiralty, he got access to these charts. He provided a outline sketch to Joseph Banks before they left Britain in 1768. And so therefore Cook, I don't think he ever acknowledged it, but certainly it's known to those of us that are into maritime history that Cook certainly knew that there was a strait up there. And so therefore, once he started his voyaging along the East Coast, he knew what he was going to face further up. He knew that there was a route below Papua New Guinea that could get him through across to what was called then the Spice Islands, we'd think of as Indonesia. And so he never acknowledged that, but it's certainly common knowledge among some of us that, let's just say he had the benefit of knowledge that aided and abetted his process of discovery.
Very diplomatically said, Lieutenant Commander Chris Maxworthy from the Australian Association of Maritime History. And with us also this afternoon is the captain of the Cristobal Colón, Ignacio Quartero. I have to ask you, Captain, if the Spanish were here in the early 1600s, why didn't they come back? We could have all been speaking Spanish and doing flamenco instead of having boiled vegetables and lamb chops and speaking English.
It could have happened, but it didn't. The thing is that, in modern times, the first Spanish ship that came back to Australia was a training ship, Juan Sebastián Elcano, that came in his first trip around the world in 1928. Then this ship came again in 1988. And in the first years of this new century, there have been many, many more ships, Spanish warships, coming. The first one in our class, the F-101, that is called Álvaro de Bazán, came in 2004. Then Cantabria and a Spanish tanker came in 2013. And now we are the third, and we hope this kind of strategic relationship and cooperation between both navies will keep on going, and you will see many more Spanish ships coming back to Australia.
Commander Maxworthy, I have to ask you, why did we turn to Spain for this? Was it because historically they were a naval power? Why not go to another nation that maybe had similar frigates?
Okay, it's a good question. I think it's fair to say that if you look at the broad history of the Royal Australian Navy, originally our antecedents were British in terms of our culture and the equipment that we procured. Then in the 1960s, when we bought our first set of destroyers, we bought those from the United States. And with that came the education system and the training and so on. And since 2007, the Spanish are being more than lucky. They've been very fortunate to offer valuable assets and capability that we in Australia have competitively selected. So in 2007, we chose two platforms. We chose these DDGs. So those will be named Hobart, well, the first in September, followed by Brisbane, then Sydney. Then we also selected that same year maritime amphibious capability, which are the ships Adelaide and Canberra, which are now we've taken delivery of. And that gives us an enormous amount of capability in terms of aid to disaster relief, humanitarian aid, amphibious capability. And we selected those on a competitive basis from many offers amongst the French, the United States. Spain, I think, and Australia have a... even though we're worlds apart in terms of distance, we have similar cultures and similar desires. Spain is a medium naval power. They provide good value. At the time we selected these, we had the global economic crisis, so the Spanish were, you know, their dockyards are owned by the government. They are providing very good value. And I think, as I've seen it from year to year, the relationship has grown and progressed. I just returned from 2 weeks. The Chief of Navy sent me to Spain and France for a total of 3 weeks to look at aspects of their training, and we have a lot in common. Probably the language would be the thing that people look at and go, well, you know, I can't speak Spanish, but all officers in the Spanish Navy and the Spanish Armada speak English very well. And the relationship seems to be going from strength to strength.
To the point where the uniforms look almost the same, I have to say. Very similar.
Very similar. In all Western navies, we use more or less the same uniforms.
Yeah, except you've got 8 buttons and Captain Cortero has 6.
Yeah, that's my gut needs to be held in. I need those extra 2 buttons.
Look, it's been fantastic having both of you in the studio. Captain Cortero, I hope you enjoy the rest of your stay here. And Commander Maxworthy, fantastic having you with us here on Drive. Thanks for coming in.
Pleasure.
Thank you very much. It was my pleasure.